Well, good morning. Really like to thank Lynn for doing that reading. Like me, we didn't know what the passage was when we volunteered. I think she did really well, so thank you for that, because it's not the easiest passage to read with a straight face. I do actually wonder whether the ministry team really booked their leave around so they know they're not here when they have a slightly more interesting passage. Because I think this has happened to me about three times now. So maybe God's telling me something, or maybe they are setting me up. Anyway, when David opened this book on the book of Proverbs, he said on one level, the book of Proverbs is really difficult to preach on because it is so obvious. And in fact, this passage is really obvious. So in summary, don't have sex with someone you're not married to. Anyway, our final song is Beautiful Saviour, and I hope you enjoy the tea and coffee. However, I think actually this would be doing a disservice to the original writer. So we ought to perhaps delve a little deeper and then put the coffee out just for a little bit longer. So, on the face of it, this passage is about avoiding sexual temptation. In fact, it's very focused on the scenario of that femme fatale, that female temptress. But just remember the context in which this book was actually written. It was originally a training manual for young men. So, in order to get their attention, not surprisingly, it talks about that adulterous woman who's enticing them in with promises that taste as sweet as honey and whose voice is as smooth as oil. And faced with temptations such as this, what young red-blooded male can resist? You've seen it in 100 TV dramas. It's a really strong urge to follow. And besides, what can go wrong? Husband's away, no one will see. But it is a sin, and sin has consequences. And although verse 5 seems a little bit melodramatic, her feet go down to death. His steps lead straight to the grave. Actually, in the context of Israelite society at the time and the law of Moses, that could literally be true. You read it in Leviticus 20:10, which reads, "If a man commits adultery with another man's wife, even with the wife of his neighbor, both the adulterer and the adulteress must be put to death." Okay, today we don't actually get killed for having sex outside of marriage. And I think to dread to think what the consequences would be if that suddenly became, retrospectively became law. However, despite what the media would lead us to believe, there are serious consequences to having sex outside of marriage. You know, there's the obvious things, such as unplanned pregnancies, and sadly the follow-on from that. I was listening on Radio 4 the other morning, and apparently recent studies have revealed that 1 in 3 women in the UK will have an abortion in their lifetime. Now I went, oh, that's just hyperbole. So I did a bit of digging around, but sadly that statistic appears true. It seems to be backed up. Appalling, absolutely appalling. But worse than that, sex with multiple partners just cheapens sex. And it just turns it into a mechanism for seeking pleasure and instant gratification, rather than deepening the lifelong bonds of love between a man and a woman in marriage. And we've seen the devastating impact that online porn in particular has had as it devalues people to become little more than a toy for our cheap gratification that can be tossed away when the novelty wears off. Or it can introduce deep insecurity in youngsters who worry whether they're attractive enough or they know how to do things right, or feel pressured into doing things they wouldn't naturally want to do. You know, if you don't go along, if you get it wrong, you could end up being ridiculed, bullied, or worse, defriended. And men, just because this passage is written on the basis of avoiding the temptation of a wayward woman, don't for any moment think that God doesn't also condemn the man who sexually preys on others just because this passage doesn't mention it. In fact, there's a direct link in there, because if you look, the author of this book was Solomon, And his father was King David, and his mother was Bathsheba. Remember the story of David? He lusted after Bathsheba, got her pregnant, and then murdered her husband. Bathsheba was not the wayward woman in that. She was just doing normal things. When David spotted her, called her over, forced her to submit to his lust, and then the rest carries on from there. You know, God profoundly rebuked David for that. And if you want to read the story, it's in 1 Kings. It's really not a nice story. But that was Solomon's father. The guy who wrote this came out of a really difficult situation. Sadly, Solomon himself didn't always learn, but let's not go there. So then, how do you avoid that temptation? Well, this passage gives some practical pointers. And that's actually really good, because you think about it is a book of instruction. So you'd expect it to give some help from this. So the first one is actually really obvious. Verse 8. Keep a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. I.e., stay away. Keep out of those places where you will face temptation. Now, the same applies to us. If we're being tempted like this, stay away from the circumstances. You know the circumstances you'll be in. You know, it could be a group of your friends who try to egg you on to join them out on a Saturday night when they go on the pool, whatever that means. Or it could be a person who's trying to flirt with you horrifically. Avoid those people. Don't put yourself in a compromising position. A slightly more probably likely example, say you've got a work colleague of the opposite sex, and they might ask you out for lunch, just the two of you, so you can chat about a few work things. Can I suggest you just give that serious thought? Don't just say yes. You see, from often innocent events like that, that one meal will lead to another one, and another one, and maybe an evening event. You can see the film plot from there. I was shocked. According to surveys, depending which survey you looked at, and there are lies, damn lies, and statistics, but people, you know, published papers indicated that between 15 and 30% of people admit to having had a work affair which led them to cheating on their partner. So be really careful. So just practically on that one, if you find yourself in a position where, you know, someone's trying to invite you out like that, you know, you could say no, or perhaps say, oh, how about if we bring XYZ with us as well and make it more of a department event? If it's really about work, then that person won't object. To be fair, though, I think probably the biggest source of temptation these days is the internet. You can get all manner of depravity on the internet with a few clicks. In that case, therefore, stay away. Protect yourself against... Protect your internet connection. You know, most computer systems these days offer parental controls. Turn them on for everyone, not just your kids. And if it's not so easy and there's a billion devices out there's other ways as well. And there's some really good free online tools that will just make it harder for people to do this. I use one called OpenDNS, for example. Freely available, free to set up. If you want some help, there's a few of us who know how to do these things. But if you don't trust yourself, maybe, to not override those controls, because you set them up, you could override them, well, how about giving the controls or the password to a friend of yours who you trust? Just a thought. So stay away is the first piece of advice. The second piece of advice is be content with what you have. Now, this passage gives really sound advice of being content with who you have. Or what you have. In fact, it even goes beyond that in commanding that you enjoy being with the person you're married to, in actually some reasonably steamy language in there. Mind you, remember this passage was writtenly aimed at teenage boys. The trouble is, if you're going to lust after someone else, then you're putting your efforts into going after them rather than putting your efforts into maintaining your relationship with your current wife stroke husband. As we all know, making a marriage work requires time and effort. You start putting your efforts elsewhere, and problems will start. It's a really, really vicious circle. You know, you stop noticing your spouse, but instead you start comparing them with another one. You start then noticing the flaws in your spouse, and instead of working it through, you just start complaining about them. You left the toilet seat up again. And then conflict arises. Instead of fixing it, just let it get worse. While thinking that your new love, oh, they're not going to be like that. And then, well, it can get to break up and divorce. Let's not go as far as that. But just be aware of where your thoughts are and make sure your effort is actually focused on the one you're with. You see, we live in a very, very consumerist society where we buy a shiny new something, phone, clothes, whatever. And then when the shine starts to fade a little bit, we toss it aside when something new catches our eye. We cannot allow this thinking to apply to our relationships and marriages. A long and successful marriage requires effort and commitment. But it's not just a grind. We should never think of our marriages as a grind. You know, God actually intends marriage to be a blessing and even fun. He did invent sex, after all. Next one, spiritual discipline. There's actually a bit more depth to this passage that you see if you look at the book of Proverbs as a whole. You see, in the earlier chapters, which we had last week and later on, the writer personifies the whole concept of wisdom as a successful woman, a woman of wisdom. This means that the readers of the book can get a practical example of how wisdom works. Remember, the book of Proverbs is not a prescriptive manual on how to live your life. It's designed to help people think about the challenges of life and how to best to respond to them. You know, the book of Proverbs can never be a manual that, you know, you could look up. Oh, I'm in this circumstance. Go down the index. Oh, yeah, it's Proverbs, blah, 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 verse, whatever. It's designed to help you think it out for yourself. It's about developing wisdom. It's not about imparting dogma. And this is really important in the context of developing the next generation of leaders, which is what the book was originally done for. But it's equally important about delivering people who can love and serve God day to day, nearly 3,000 years later. As an aside, I find this absolutely fascinating that the writer of this book uses for book for young men who are going into leadership, their role model should be a woman of wisdom. I'm sure there's an entire sermon in that in its own right. But that's really interesting as an example. Anyway, in this chapter and those that follow, the writer is effectively introducing the opposite to the woman of wisdom, a woman of folly, for whom adultery and lust are but two of her follies. It's to help the scholar see the difference. This is good. This is what bad looks like. And it also, this passage also includes the importance of spiritual discipline. If you look at verses 12 to 14, the writer has come to the end of his life and is moaning. You will say, how I hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers. I'd or turn my ear from my instructors. I was soon in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people. You see, in this passage, one antidote to temptation is spiritual discipline. If you're spending your time looking God's way, then you're far less likely to be looking the other way. God's way or the other way. And like an athlete submits to physical discipline to build up their body, then as a Christian submits to spiritual discipline, then they will build up their ability to stand firm against the attacks of the evil one. So what are the components of spiritual discipline? Well, again, you could have a whole series of sermons on this, and I think we have done in the past. But the obvious ones are studying the Bible, worship, and spending time in prayer. If you get those three right, that's a very good starting point. But there's a large number of others as well, including meditation, fasting, simplicity, solitude, submission, confession, fellowship, and silence. You see, we live, and that was just a list I culled from a very quick search of a few things on the internet. You see, we live actually in an age now where there's resources to aid us in these disciplines has never been greater. You know, when I was growing up, if I wanted to find out about spiritual disciplines or another thing, I had to go down to the local Christian bookshop, which was in Romsey or Southampton. These days, it's all available to us very quickly. You know, there's books, podcasts, videos, blogs, articles, training courses, and a huge variety available just on a few clicks on the internet. So to know about these things and learn these things, we've never had more opportunities. But sadly, we're also in an age when it's never been easy to find ourselves busy doing other things. Also related often to the internet. Those cat pictures really look great. You know, as a challenge, can I suggest you actually look at the search history on your phone and actually see how much of your time is spent looking up things of God and how much of it is spent elsewhere? Is it prayer or Instagram that takes most of your time? Ultimately, it all boils down to faithfulness. Elsewhere in the Bible, the prophets regularly equate the wayward people of Israel to being like an unfaithful woman. Time and time again, if you look through the prophets, you'll see that. Because the people of Israel were someone who lusts after other, people who were lusting after other gods rather than after the God who formed, saved them, and who longs to have them back. Indeed, as an example for this, the prophet Isaiah was told to marry an unfaithful woman as a practical lesson to those people of Israel who were around him. It was a practical lesson about the importance of being faithful to God and his ways. Now, it's really easy to get eaten up with guilt as we think about the times when we've been unfaithful in word, thought, or deed. And I'm not just talking about being unfaithful sexually. I'm talking about all the times we've been unfaithful to God and his ways. All of us, me included, know the times when we've let God down. However, be assured that God is faithful to us. He never gives up trying to restore us. He can never be unfaithful to us. And that's the whole point about the story of Hosea, if you look it up. Though his wife was unfaithful to him and left him multiple times, Hosea continued to love his wife, even going so far as to buying her back from another man with hard cash. God did the same for us. Although we were deep in the debt to our sin, God paid the price for our sin by dying on that cross, and he brought us back as an act of love. And that's not just one-shot purchase. God continues to forgive us if we mess up or succumb to temptation. He is faithful. Can I challenge you today to remain faithful as well to him? We can reflect on this in our next song, which I've chosen, I Surrender All. Quite an old song, but the lyrics are really powerful. As the singers and bands come up to lead us, can I just suggest you just take a moment just to examine your own heart. Confess those times where you've not been faithful and when you've succumbed to temptation. And can I suggest you use this song as a means to respond in repentance? Thank you.